Morning, everyone. I'd like to call the Finance Committee meeting to order, and we're going to hop right into it. Representative Frederick, I believe you have a bill, and a project you're working on, if you want to bring yourself and your guests up. And welcome to the committee, Representative Frederick, and I'll move that House File 1543 be laid over for possible inclusion. And welcome, Representative, and go ahead when you're ready, sir.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members. House File 1543 is about one of the coolest things that we can talk about, which is children's museums. I get pretty excited about them because I think they're amazing. They're one of the favorite things that I like to take my kids to. And when I get to take them there, they're always packed. And I think that they serve a great purpose, their resource to the communities of which they're in. So this bill is looking for an appropriation for Greater Minnesota Children's Museums. Each year, about tens of thousands of children attend their children's museums. And they provide spaces for what I would call experiential learning, whether that's a tree fort like there is in Mankato, or learning about electricity and how all of that can go from one connection to the next, or even things like tactile learning, whether it's like Legos or other things, which there's an education piece. It's all a great resource, and I could talk about it all day, but we are lucky enough that we have someone who came up from, I might be biased, but I'm going to say the best children's museum in Minnesota, which is Louise Dickmeyer from the Children's Museum of Southern Minnesota, which is located in Mankato. So, Mr. Chair, I would turn it over to her.
Thank you, Representative Frederick, and go ahead when you're ready. Please introduce yourself.
Yes, thank you, Chair Lilly and committee members. My name is Louise Dickmeyer. I'm the CEO of the Children's Museum of Southern Minnesota, located in Mankato. And I want to thank you for your consideration this morning for all of the children's museums across the state. Today, I am representing a coalition of 10 children's museums and discovery centers throughout Minnesota. The members of this coalition are located in Bloomington, Brainerd and Baxter, Breckenridge, Duluth, Fergus Falls, Grand Rapids, Hutchinson, St. Cloud, and Wilmer. Together, the Coalition Museums serve over 500,000 guests each year, that and we capture visitors from every county in Minnesota. When the legacy funding started years ago, there were 3 such museums, and today there are 13. While we've all appreciated the funding we've received in the past from the legacy funds, together, coalition members are seeking equity in legacy funding for moving from an annual moving to an annual appropriation for all children's museums and eliminating the competitive grant process. An annual appropriation empowers each of our museums to plan our programs, our exhibits, and our access initiatives with greater certainty. When we are no longer competing with other museums for grants, we're able to collaborate fully. And in addition, for museums with limited resources, this approach gets much-needed funding into their hands much more easily. The programs supported by legacy funds are incredibly impactful on the well-being of children and families. Play is children's work, and it is critical to their development. Learning through play is highly effective and is the goal of all of us running children's museums in our state and across the world. If a child is not done learning how to learn by the time they are age 3, it is a remedial effort from there. Our key demographic is birth to 9, and I believe we serve as an important feeder into the K-12 educational system. Access programs are central to our museum's work. For example, in my museum, the Children's Museum of Southern Minnesota, we consistently maintain 30% of our membership in what we call a Gateway to Play membership that is given to families facing barriers at no cost. Many of these families tell us that our museum is the only safe place that their children can play. Of our present 2,458 members, 689 of them are Gateway to Play memberships. That's a value of around $82,000 that has been given away free. Additionally, last year, 9.5% of all of our admissions were for access admissions, whether they were those member visits or special initiatives, like when we gave play passes in our community's summer backpack food program. Daily in children's museums across the state, county, and school, caseworkers meet at the museum for supervised visits and assessments. The museum environment is welcoming and respectful, encouraging families to interact and explore, not to sit and wonder what to do next. This kind of interaction is important to all families, but it is of particular value to those families that are rebuilding relationships. Another important access program is our school group visits. In Mankato, we serve mostly rural districts that have a 50% or higher rate of free and reduced lunches. And in 2022, the CMSM served school groups from around 20 different counties in Minnesota. Conversely, the Children's Discovery Museum in Grand Rapids had to eliminate their very successful and popular school group program because they could no longer subsidize the cost, given that they received zero legacy funds in the last competitive grant round. That meant that thousands of children were unable to make an amazing or take in an amazing learning through play experience. So finally, I just want you to remember that children's museums and discovery centers play a critical role in the early development of children who learn through play and exploration. Our museums are community hubs for both informal and standard-based learning that engages children and caring adults through exhibits and programs, field trips, and special events. Each of our museums offer experiences that are unique to our community, highlighting our local history, highlighting our regional industry, and our culture. Thank you for considering an annual appropriation from legacy funds to continue this impactful work.
Thank you, Director Dickmeyer. I'm just going to interrupt for a second. I'd like to welcome, we have some guests today, and they're from Lake International Language Academy. Is that right? From Forest Lake?
Yes.
Welcome to the Legacy Committee, and thank you for being here. And today we're talking about children's museums. So I don't know if you've ever been to a children's museum, but we're talking about children's museums all over the state of Minnesota. So welcome. So Representative Frederick, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I would just say that I think children's museums are pretty awesome. If you want to picture a kid walking into a space and they can hit a button and it's different sites where they can pick where power might be generated. They may not understand that at the point. And then it goes to the next point where it might be a power substation. They can follow kind of this light rope over the next space. And then they can pick what house it goes to. And these houses are made out of Legos, and they can see little Lego people. And so it's really fun. It's interactive. But at the same time, they're literally learning about our electric grid and how power is generated and how a light bulb in our house might get turned on. I mean, that's just one example of what kids can learn when they go to children's museums. They're a great educational resource for our community, and I would just really appreciate the support of the committee.
Thank you, Representative Frederick. We have a question from Representative Becker.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you. With being somewhat new to the committee, how has the appropriations for these children museums been done in the past? And I know you mentioned, the testifier mentioned through grants, but did they generally get these amount of grants? Was it a higher dollar figure? So if one of you two could go through that, I would appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Frederick, or...
Go ahead. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the question. I, in the past, when we've carried similar legislation like this, there has been specific dollar value appropriations asking for each site. It's been the discretion of the committee to put it into a competitive grant process, allowing then each site would then apply for X amount of dollars. And so then it would be up to the committee about how much they have put into that. This bill is asking that we can avoid that and making a very specific ask that there is a set appropriation that would go to each specifically listed children's museums.
Okay. Representative Becker.
And thank you. I appreciate that. How does that fall compared to the last 2 years biennium. What was that amount? I know you said it was a competitive grant process back then, but what did each of the museums receive during that competitive grant process?
Representative Frederick.
Yes, so it was, they were varying amounts. Some museums received nothing, as I noted. Others received larger awards. It was based on their application and the criteria that was being applied during that particular grant cycle. So it did vary.
Representative Backer.
Thank you. And we see that each museum has $150,000. How was that amount determined, the $150,000? For each of these museums listed in 1543.
Mr. Dickmeyer.
Yes, I can speak to that. We as a coalition had a conversation, a discussion around what our needs are and what we thought would be a good amount that would serve the annual programs and exhibits and access programs. That is what we settled on. It was an award. We're one of the larger museums in that coalition. It was similar to the award that we had received. We got a $150,000 award in that last grant round, so we chose that amount. It is more impactful for smaller museums that have limited resources. So I was certainly willing to sign on and happy to sign on with that kind of an annual appropriation. Okay.
Representative Backer.
And I appreciate allowing these questions here. My next question is what would the $150,000 be used for? Are they operating expenses? I know you've mentioned exhibits and you've mentioned other things. So for clarifications, because I don't see interactive exhibits, outreach programs, I get that. But could you be a little bit more specific on that, please? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Dickmeyer.
Yes, thank you. It is for new exhibit development. It is for enhancing existing or retrofitting existing exhibits. It is also for our programming as well as some of those access initiatives. Different museums have used the funds for different purposes, including the funding those school group visits as well as other access initiatives and special programming that they may cultivate. So that would be some of the staffing costs and certainly the operational costs.
Okay. That's all right now. Thank you. That's all for now for me.
Representative Finke.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you. My question was answered.
Thank you. Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is, I see 10 here. Are there more in the state? Are there others that aren't on this list? I'm new to the game here, so I'm just curious. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Dickmeyer?
Yes. There are three other museums. You're going to hear from two of them next that just aren't a part of the coalition because their particular needs are different than ours. And then there is a Discovery Center in Bemidji that has not yet signed on to our coalition. So total of 13.
Representative Scraba.
No, thank you. That's
Representative Hurt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to say two things quick. One, a comment and a question. So thank you, Representative, for bringing this forward. My children grew up in the Children's Museums as well here in the Twin Cities. And, I came from a community in which I didn't always have access to this type of interaction as a child growing up because my family had income barriers to this. And so I think that anytime we can invest in our children's museums, I think it's really important. This question, maybe Chair, maybe you and I can maybe talk about this offline, but I'm very new to legacy here, and I have come to really understand that we don't like to generally appropriate directly to organizations. And I find that when we are asking for funding for communities of color, we often say, oh, we don't do direct appropriations. But then when we have something like this, we say, well, we're gonna directly appropriate in this way. And I just want to note the inconsistency in how we do that and how communities of color and communities where low income individuals would have to access it are continually being asked to operate by a different set of standards. And so I just want to be very clear that I'm extremely supportive of Children's Museum. I love them. But again, the inconsistency in how we apply, mm-hmm. how we choose to do things, I want to be very clear that to note that, and I would love to maybe talk with you off record, because I don't want to hurt the ability of these museums to get what they need. But I also want to see that when communities of color are asking for support, that we give them the same consideration as we are, where we're giving something that may benefit a demographic of people who might already have ability to access things. So I just wanted to, and you don't have to answer that here, Chair. I was putting that question out there so we can maybe have this discussion at another point, but I wanted to ask it so that our guests can also see what we are struggling with here and what we're trying to do.
Thank you, Representative Herger. And I actually appreciate the question, because the last couple of bienniums, just to be clear, we have done competitive grants, and that's intentional by the committee. You know, there's recently a couple reasons. You know, one of them's kind of was pinpointed in the recent grant study that came out, and so I think there is some value in having organizations being vetted and that sort of thing. So that's, as a chair, that's kind of been my, in the previous legacy committee, that's kind of been their position. So that's, they've, you know, the children's museums of various, you know, in this kind of category have been through the competitive grants. So, and that's kind of, so this would be something new, a change, and certainly worthy of discussion of, you know, which is the right path forward, but and that's what we're going to have this session. So thank you. Any final comments, Representative Frederick?
I would just say, Mr. Chair, that I can appreciate the comments by Representative Herr. And I'm just grateful that we can all be on the same page that children's museums in general provide a lot of value into the communities that they are a part of, and any way that we can support them, I'm just grateful for.
Thank you, Representative Frederick, and members for this discussion. And I know they're of value. Of, you know, lucky enough to be on Representative Lee's committee, and we've toured some others, you know, some of these facilities around the state. And I know in his bill he has some commitments to some of these museums as well. And but I really appreciate the discussion, and thank you for coming today.
Thank you.
With that, House File 1543 is laid over. Thank you. Representative Smith. As he's coming forward, I'll move that House File 1024 be laid over for possible inclusion. And welcome, Representative Smith, and go ahead when you're ready, please.
Yeah, thank you so much, Mr. Chair and committee. Thank you for hearing 1024. I'm really excited to present this to you all, and there's some really great stuff that we're going to present to you here. I'm buying time while my iPad starts up. Okay, now I'm ready. Again, thank you for hearing this bill. I just wanted to say, so this bill is about giving funds to the Children's Museum Spark in Rochester, Minnesota. It is a gem of our community. It's absolutely lovely, and I was trying to think of a way to communicate that to a bunch of politicians like myself, and I thought a good answer to it would be if you go to my social media sites right now and look up the picture of when I toured this facility, it's one of my most liked of the year. So good for constituents. But that's why this bill has such great bipartisan support in our community. You'll see in the letters of support, our mayor supports this. It's being forward by three DFL Minnesota House members. It's on, there's a letter of support from a GOP senator in our area, Senator Carlin Nelson. It's across the board, something that we really love in Rochester and is extremely, extremely valuable for our community, for our parents, and for children. Before I hand the baton off to someone who knows a whole lot more about this than I do, I wanted to focus on the success story that the Spark Museum is. In fiscal year 21 to fiscal year 22, we saw an 87% increase in attendance, a massive influx of people coming to this facility to enjoy it, And I also want to point out that while enjoying that massive success, this museum stayed on mission. In that same period, from fiscal year 21 to fiscal year 22, the growth rate of free or reduced admission increased 1,600% from those years. That's 16 perfect 100% grade increase on free or reduced admission. And that's everything from intergenerational learning, when grandparents are able to come with their children and enjoy those learning experiences. That's for children who might have sensory needs, getting particular admission for those things, and especially historically marginalized communities being able to enjoy this facility. And then also universally on Sundays, having time where the whole community can come for free. So I love this museum. I love this service for Rochester, and I'm happy to bring this bill to you. And without further ado, let me introduce Heather Nessler, who, with all due respect to the last presenter, is the director of the best children's museum in Minnesota. Heather, go ahead.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Director Nessler.
Thank you, Chair Lilly, Vice Chair Hussein, and committee members. And thank you, Representative Smith, for introducing and authoring our bill. My name is Heather Nessler, and I am the Executive Director of the Children's Museum of Rochester, also known as SPARC. I'm here today to speak to House File 1024, which would provide $200,000 in fiscal year 24 and $200,000 in fiscal year 25, appropriated from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. The funding would build upon initiatives funded with previous appropriations from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, with the goal of increasing access and engagement for diverse audiences through SPARC's programs and exhibits, which will promote Minnesota arts, culture, and history. At our core, we focus on STEAM, which is science, technology, engineering, arts, and math, cultural connectedness, and health and well-being through interactive exhibits and programs in our collaborative learning environment. The story of SPARC began as the pandemic was ramping up locally. We opened our doors in August 2020, expecting to serve around 40,000 visitors a year. That was our first year. Now, just over 2 years later, we have engaged with more than 150,000 visitors in our museum, with 70,600 more plus of those in this year alone. Our economic development region serves a population of about 520,000 people. And while our admission has grown by 87% from 21 to 22, we clearly have more families to reach. Even still, we want to celebrate that last year we served individuals from 81 counties in Minnesota. And access to the museum, which means free or reduced admission fees, has increased by 1,600% since August 2020, with an expense we incurred from our general operations budget. We are a unique children's museum. Throughout the year, SPARC has implemented more than 750 hands-on programs in our space with more than 200 community partners. As the director of SPARC, my personal mission is to continue to find ways to serve more families, all families, in our community and region. This year, we're pleased to partner with organizations like the American Indian Education Department from Rochester Public Schools, ACLA, which is the Alliance of Chicanos, Hispanics, and Latin Americans, the Pomoja Women, which is a group that exists to empower women and girls of East African descent, and the Ronald McDonald House, which serves as a safe haven for families of children with devastating illnesses, Families First, Head Start, and more. We provide enrichment, special accommodations, and most importantly, free access to our museum for organizations like these in our community. We intentionally focus on early childhood screening and parent education so that the youngest members of our future generation learn about and receive interventions and support. In other words, we wrap around the whole family and all families. With an appropriation of funding from the Arts and Heritage Fund, SPARC could increase the depth and quality of programming, the quantity of programming, and allow us to offer more access to children and families that are in need of enrichment. We aspire to introduce our families to rich cultural traditions and diversity in arts and language, with programs like Traditions Around the World, Sign Language Storytime, and exploration of different art mediums, just to name a few. Well on their way to gaining steam, we have a successful foundation to build upon. Children's museums have become even more critical community assets, serving families needing educational opportunities outside of home and school. We see a tremendous need in our community, and we do not anticipate that need to subside. In fact, we anticipate 100,000 visitors this year, with approximately 20% of those visitors accessing the museum with free or reduced admission because of the need in our community. It is our duty to see that that gap is filled. I thank you for your time and consideration of House File 1024.
Thank you, Director Nesser. And we have a question. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Smith and Director Nesler, for highlighting the increase in visitors for free and reduced admissions. And so my question to you is, how do you determine who qualifies for this program? And then the follow-up will be, how have you made this possible?
Representative Smith or Director Nesler.
I can answer that. How we determine those organizations, we strategically have relationships and partnerships with organizations in our community that directly serve families of low income or serve families, as I mentioned, the Pomoja women, for instance, of East African heritage. So traditionally marginalized families that maybe don't have a voice normally. So we have relationship with those communities, and we use grant dollars that we have to write for continually to fund those family nights or those access nights. The less grant dollars we receive, the less that we can do. That's where the heritage or the legacy funds come in. So that's how we've made that possible. Did I answer all those questions?
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that, Director. And so just last follow-up then. You mentioned in your remarks that you're projecting 20% for the next fiscal year. If we were to be able to appropriate this for you, do you imagine seeing that projection increase from 20%, and what is that number?
Yeah, I would anticipate that. Sorry, I didn't wait. I was so excited. We work with, there are four schools in our school district that are full service community schools, which means that they have wraparound services at their school. But in addition to that, the free and reduced percentage of schools just in Rochester alone is around 38%. So we have relationships with those folks, so we would be able to directly reach out to them rather than just make this a come one, come all. It's intentionally targeted towards school districts. I would project that it would probably go up to around that same percentage that you would see for free and reduced lunch in Rochester.
Could I also just add on to that? Because I think this is important. We actually, this isn't just things we're planning on. There is data that this is continually increasing. If you look at the data sheet there, you can see that in 21, 5% of visitors had free or reduced lunch. Fiscal year 22 is 13%. And the data we have from fiscal year 23 is now at 16%. So even without these funds, we've seen this increase. It's a value that this organization has. And it's not like more funds will allow us to do something we're not already doing. It will feed into something that is working.
Representative Lee. Representative Backer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you. My question is we'll start with, I see the appropriation on this is $200,000. The other appropriations to the other museums, which I probably knew the question was coming, why the $50,000? Because if you look at the, I would assume, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mankato, St. Cloud's going to be similar. I know it's probably, obviously, Breckenridge, Fergus Falls, and the district I represent would probably service less individuals, children, and families. But what's the reasoning behind the $200,000, please?
Yeah, I'll go first, and then you can maybe fill in the details, Director. Just a general response to that question, and this is something I'm very passionate about generally, is sometimes in this legislature, ooh, early in the morning, I haven't had my second cup of coffee yet. Rochester has been treated sort of like a suburb of the Twin Cities. We are our own metropolitan area, and Rochester is 120,000 people, but we serve a metropolitan area of about 225,000 people. We're the second biggest metropolitan area in the state. We have the second busiest airport, and I haven't even talked about the 40,000 people that come from outside that metropolitan area to work every day or travel or come for medical expenses. So Rochester is a major city, and I know that's not often understood, which I understand if you haven't been down there, but it is a major city. And so this bill is just a consequence of us sort of realizing that we need to start talking about ourselves like that and fight for our dollars from the state government in that way. So this is I'm speaking larger than that, but in focusing in on this bill, this Children's Museum is not just people from Rochester, but people from Dodge County, you know, Cass and Byron, all over, and people worldwide visiting Mayo Clinic. So we have a lot of needs that are unique to Rochester, which is why we decided to bring it like this. Director Nestler, do you want to fill in there?
Yeah, I'll add one more thing. We, I always go before you call me. I apologize.
All right, go ahead.
One other thing, unlike other museums, we really offer a lot of programming. We're about 10,000 square feet, and we use every single square inch of that building. And because of that, we offer daily programming, usually two to three different types of programming throughout the day. And so programming can be expensive as you try to engage multiple viewpoints, multiple perspectives. So that's also part of the reason for the ask.
Representative Becker.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and so forth. And I appreciate that. At the same time, I would point out, and I mean this respectfully, I would agree with you, Representative Smith, that Rochester is very important for our state. That also means that Rochester has access to corporations like we see on the list that I would suspect Fergus Falls or Breckenridge would never see a donation from Mayo Clinic. So, you know, I just would point that out. That would be my concern on that there. And I do know I have not visited Rochester. When I'm down there, I would very much would like to do that. I do know that Fergus Falls and Breckenridge is a smaller one, and that one-on-one is very important. So those smaller sizes are just important as the bigger ones. My question next would be is, this is in the bill to create new opportunities for hands-on learning. Can you be specific on programs? What's between your two earlobes on that when it comes to that word, create new opportunities? If you could share that, I would appreciate that. Thank you.
Director Nassar.
Thanks. The gamut is wide. One thing, like traditions around the world, we have been able to focus on five at this time, five traditions or holidays around the world. We would love to expand that further to include Holi, for instance. You know, we focused on Christmas, Kwanzaa, and Hanukkah in December. But we would love to have the opportunity and the resources to be able to go even broader than that and take in the whole world. And I say that because we have visitors from all over the world coming into our facility. So that's one example. We would work with our trades, which is something that we're really, really excited to do because there is a strong need in our community for trades workers, and why not start them young? And it's families that are coming into our museum, not just children, right? So it's an interactive experience with families, and so we'd love to have more trades opportunities. We have a lot of STEM-focused, art-focused exhibits, but we'd like to expand that even more so. But I'm talking more about program and access, and so it would be probably focused on some of those arts and culture pieces, trades, and expanding what we're already working on.
Representative Becker.
No other questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Representative Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just looking at the language to build upon initiatives funding with previous appropriations to increase access and engagement for diverse audiences. If you can elaborate what those initiatives are.
Director Nestler.
So our history, SPARC, like I told you before, we opened in 2020. Previous to that, we were a satellite branch of the Minnesota Children's Museum, St. Paul. And when we were part of the St. Paul Children's Museum, we did receive funding through the legacy that we were able, and it helped us get our start and build foundations. And after that, we did not receive funding. And so we still continued with our mission. We stayed true to our mission, but that came from our general ops budget. So you have to make some choices. What's going to be the most impactful way to use these dollars? And in the past, previous to my arrival on the scene at SPARC, we used those dollars for what I talked about, arts, cultural heritage, and I believe access as well. Does that answer your question?
Representative Vang.
I think generally, I mean, I guess I would just like to understand what does increasing access and engagement looks like for diverse audiences, mm-hmm. and if, you know, I guess that answer is part of it, But. Yeah.
Director Nessler.
What we would do, or what I'm trying to share, is that we're going to continue to focus on growing access to the museum and increasing access, but with appropriation of funds, we were able to reach out to specific and intentional groups. So whether that's our full-service community schools, whether that's smaller communities outside of Rochester, because we serve them too. There isn't another children's museum. The closest one is Mankato, as Ms. Dickmeyer talked about earlier. So it would be reaching out to those groups, inviting them in. Is that a field trip? Is that an evening event? Is that expanding when we offer our free events for children with sensory needs and families with sensory needs? So it's expanding all of the things that we're currently working on to reach more families.
Representative. Okay. Thank you. Before we get to closing comments, I just want to thank you. I really appreciate your answer to Representative Lee's question. Kind of a chair's comment. Opening these facilities up and keeping them affordable and accessible to families of all income levels, and it sounds like you really are making an effort to be proactive to reach out to the community aggressively, which is, I think, really important. And that stands out because some of the people that seems to me that get our funds are not living up to that bar in my mind. And I think you really are when you show the numbers that they're growing and trying. I think of like the Como Zoo that's, you know, quite successful at getting people in at a reasonable rate. There's others that are, I think, get money that from our fund that I don't think are successful and maybe limit access, you know, financially. So it's a little bit disappointing, but it sounds like you're trying to make a good effort. Representative Chau.
Thank you, Chair Lilly. My question, excuse me, is to the page of Board of Directors. Can you expand on the diversity of your board?
Director Nessler.
I can. Our board consists of 20 individuals. It's very diverse in terms of the skill set everyone brings. I do not have, I could potentially call Lindsay Hemker, our development director, up to the table because she collects the demographic data. I can tell you anecdotally that it's diverse, but Lindsay would be able to answer questions.
Let's bring Lindsay up.
Lindsay, can I call you to come up here to the podium?
And the entire class that is, no, I'm just kidding.
As she's coming up, just want to thank the students for coming today and hope you enjoy your experience at the legislature. And pay attention in school because you're going to take over for us. please state your name and if you heard, did you hear the question? And
yeah, good morning. My name is Lindsay Hemker, and I'm the development director for SPARC, the Children's Museum of Rochester. Thank you so much for your question. I do collect data as the grants that I write do ask about our diverse board, and right now it makes up about 35% of our board that is non-Caucasian.
Thank you. Representative Chau.
Thank you. That's good to know. You know, when we talk about inclusion and, you know, reaching out to other underserved communities, it's good to have representation, and that's what we need to change, you know, in every organization, is that if we want to and we believe in change, that we must change it from the top down, not from the bottom up. So I appreciate the answer. Thank you.
I will also note it's about 70% female and 30% male at this time.
Representative John. Oh, that's good. Thank you very much for coming up. Representative Smith, any final comments?
I don't think so. I appreciate you all listening to this presentation about this great organization, and thank you for hearing this bill, and hopefully gets included on the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Representative Smith and Director. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
With that, the bill is laid over. Thank you. So next up is Vice Chair Hussein. As he's going forward, welcome. Representative Hussein, would you like to move that House File 1263 be laid over for possible inclusion?
Yes, I will.
Thank you. So your Representative or Vice Chair Hussein, go ahead when you're ready. And welcome to your committee.
Thank you for having me here, Mr. Chair and community members. I am very excited to carry this bill, which will provide a critical funding for Minnesota Children's Museum. For more than 40 years, the museum has been delivering on mission children's learning through play. Minnesota Children's Museum has made great use of legacy fund. It's the best and will continue to do so. Hundreds of thousands of families have enjoyed new learning experience made possible by legacy funding. Looking ahead, the museum has been seeking additional funding to continue delivery exhibit that delights family and engage young minds. The museum also eager to add resource to allow reorganizing community engagement, reaching underserved community through program and special events. And I would like to welcome my testifier, please.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Welcome, President Kreisen. Go ahead when you're ready, please.
Thank you, Chair Lilly and members of the committee. My name is Diane Kreisen. I'm president of Minnesota Children's Museum. And I just wanted to start by first recognizing that we actually have a couple constituents of children's museums in our audience today, and wanted to maybe just be so bold here as to ask if Representative Heitzman is comfortable with one to join me as a testifier and share what hands-on learning has been happening while there has been testifying that is going on.
Welcome, young man.
Welcome.
Can you tell us what are you working on?
Welcome, Troy Heitzman.
Not really what it is, but I thought it could be for our two cats.
Cat toy.
Can you hold it up so people can see it, Troy?
Yeah, put it up a little bit so everybody can see it.
Wow. That's pretty good.
Thank you. It's so very creative.
That help
sure
you a little bit?
Members could do that.
Dad was taking video. That we don't want them, I could just get out the toy.
You did amazing work. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Troy.
Thank you, Troy. And that's
President Kreisen.
Great problem solving happening right there. We happened to bring along with ourselves what we call some tinker kits that if we had more time, we were going to distribute them to the committee for you to spend time playing. I know, Chair Lilly, you had had some hands-on activities that we've done in prior committee meetings. But we found some youth to take advantage of those kits that we brought. But I just wanted to start today with just a two-minute video to bring the voices of parents and children into the hearing today.
We love the Children's Museum because...
Might be a little hard to hear, but I think we're kind of getting it as loud as we can.
So. Okay.
Everybody wants to play and have a good time.
I have been a member since I was a little girl here, since I was about 5 years old, so probably about 16 years now. All the kids are smiling, they're laughing. You see kids interacting with kids that they've never met before. You see kids interacting with adults. The environment is all around just very positive and happy.
My son just like squealed when we walked in here. He definitely feels free here, which is fun, and I don't worry about him like getting into something he's not supposed to. So it's nice to just like let him go crazy and just be him.
it's really nice to have them, you know, playing with kids of all backgrounds. They're learning to communicate and learning to share and take turns and be patient while they wait for the slide. So there's a lot that they are learning.
We're probably here at least once a week and just having him be able to interact with other kids. And I really like how the museum, that you guys change out the exhibit so much, so there's new things for him to experience, and we really enjoyed that.
A lot of what we've been looking for are activities for the kids to do that are not screens, but that are, especially in the winter and then the dog days of summer when it's quite warm, things for them to do that are safe, that are creative, engaging, but are screen-free.
Over the last couple of years, it's been way too much screen time, so this has been a great outlet for us to get away and get some more healthy interaction with people and with, you know, just some playtime. Just her imagination has gone through the roof.
There's always something new and exciting. They're happy, they're engaged, they're having fun and learning without realizing it.
It's a great place to interact with kids our age and to learn and grow.
We love the Children's Museum because it's a place for all of our kids and all of their interests.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
See ya.
Fun video. Director Kreisheim.
All right. So, yeah, with that video, I just wanted to note, too, like, we didn't recruit in advance. We didn't script anybody. We just brought a camera out onto the museum floor one day and just ask people why you're coming to the museum, and that's what we've heard, and that's what people would say about all, you know, the children's museums and why they go to them. One of the quotes in there, you know, I know the audio wasn't very loud, but said, you know, a couple different quotes talked about, you change out the exhibit so much, there are new things for him to experience, and there's always something new and exciting. And it is thanks to the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund that we have that capability to provide fresh learning experiences to families as they come to the museum. So I am just going to, why is it when you're up here you freeze and you, like, don't remember how to do it? Thank you. See, I love having coaches. Okay, so first, just a little background on Minnesota Children's Museum. We do serve more than 400,000 visitors who come from all counties and all corners of our state. 26% of our audience identifies as Black, Indigenous, or persons of color, which is higher than the total in Minnesota, which averages about 20%. And we also, as you've heard from other testifiers today, we are committed to making sure that financial barriers don't limit a family's access to the learning experiences inside our walls. And so more than one in five really visitors who come through our doors come through one of those income qualified programs. I wanted to highlight the history of legacy funding to Minnesota Children's Museum to put our ask in context today. We have received a direct appropriation since the history of the funding started there with the 2009 session. And 2 years ago, you'll see that dip. 2 years ago, we asked for a decrease. Whoever does that, but we asked for a decrease of our funding, and we had advocated that that decrease in funding, that amount, would be put into the competitive granting pool for other children's museums. And unfortunately, we got the decrease, and the other children's museums did not get that increase. So I just wanted to highlight and put our ask into context today, that what we are asking today, if you compare it to where we were back in the 2019 session, we are asking for an increase. It's a 10% increase compared to where we were in 2019. And I can just say, over those 4 years, inflation has sort of outpaced that increase. But, you know, we advocated for that 2 years ago because we believe in the importance of Children's Museum. We are friends and colleagues that I'm here with today talking about the importance of Children's Museum. We are a collaborative and collegial field. And we are here together, and I appreciate that we're all testifying on the same day, because we are here really advocating for an increase funding collectively for children's museums, because this is an investment, as we've been hearing about today, hopefully seen in the video, this is an investment in the future of our children here in the state. I just want to quickly highlight three projects that we've done with the previous appropriation that we received. One of the new experiences we created is called Shipwreck Adventures, which combines pretend play and adventure play. It's an immersive environment. You know, you get into a ship hull. There's an area. This is an actual designed after an actual shipwreck that happened in Lake Superior that we worked with the diver who discovered this shipwreck. There's a Cliffs and Coves, which is inspired by the Lake Superior shore. As children immerse in that, it encourages them to explore. It encourages them to create their own stories. We have a lot of costumes in this space to spark that imagination. There's a life vest and a scuba tank. There, you can be a sturgeon. You can be an otter. You can be a northern long-haired bat, a long-eared bat. With that, you know, we just see so much creativity happen in that space. We have a green screen in that area, which we switched out to do videos as opposed to a static background. And it was just fascinating to see how much that took the storytelling up, like trying to climb that wall and sort of position yourself so you can be riding a fish that is swimming by you, and other great things there. And we also see, because we did work with the diver who discovered the wreck, we have the footage of the camera as they were diving with that, and we see families, and that footage is playing in the exhibit, and we have families sort of talking together and asking questions of each other, like, what do you think is happening here? What do you think we're seeing within that? So a lot of communication skills being developed, a lot of just thinking through what's happening there. Another kind of very different exhibit that we created is in a gallery we call Imaginopolis, which is really all about creating unusual, whimsical world where children are inspired again to use their imagination. You know, there really seems to be less room for imagination in childhood as life has become more and more structured. Being able to offer an experience that is more wide open creates space for a child to put in their own ideas, and that really helps to foster creativity. Thanks to legacy funding, we completely change out this exhibit to create sort of a new space of inspiration and imagination. We're able to do that on a biennium basis with that. This version we call Nature Remix. It takes things that children might be familiar with, like worms, apple peels, bird's nests. We put them in out of scale, so we make them odd because they're out of scale to their real life, so it presents them in an unusual way. And taking this familiar things in a new way, it gets children thinking and creating new brain connections. You know, recently we saw a group of children inside. This is kind of like a fish, giant fish skeleton. We saw them inside, and one child yells, "This is our house. We need to build a roof for their house." And then all of a sudden, all these kids that didn't come together, you know, start putting these, you know, Velcro fish scales all over the house. Or we have these giant worms, and, you know, for one child, they invited the giant worms in for a tea party. For another group of kids, they decided to make worm stew. You know, but we're, you know, you know, there's no right answer, and that's the point. You know, how are you creating your own story in this space? And the last project I want to highlight is these tinker kits that we had an opportunity to see there. We were able to distribute more than 2,500 tinker kits to community groups thanks to legacy funding. They went to schools, they went to daycares, they went to community organizations that primarily serve under-resourced families. You know, the kits contain just this collection of objects that encourage open-ended creative play. So there is no, you know, hey, can you figure out that problem with your cat and figure out how, you know, they, you know, play with the right thing and not the wrong thing? That problem wasn't given. You create your own problem. You create your own solution that you're trying to share with that. I also want to share a quote that we received. A set of these kits went to the community engagement unit of the Hennepin County Attorney's Office. And what they said to us is that they used the kits to help children who are waiting at the Domestic Abuse Service Center while their parent is getting services after experiencing an assault. These boxes will bring a bit of joy to these kids during a very traumatic time. So thanks to legacy funding, this bit of joy was able to be put out there. So our request for this year is $650,000 annually. As I had mentioned previously, that is a 10% increase from the funding that we had received in 2019. And there are really two purposes that we want to use those funds for: to continue to create these new hands-on learning experiences and to increase community engagement. So a couple early ideas on what do I mean by new learning experiences. Here are two early concepts. There's a water valve challenge that we want to bring into a water play area that we have at the museum. Here's one of our fabricators doing prototyping with this valve, where the idea is you have water and you have some ping pong balls and you're trying to figure out how to get it from point A to point B by manipulating all the different tubes there. And so what the fabricator here is trying to figure out is how to maximize the problem solving in there. So there's like a lot of solutions, a lot of paths, and a bit of maybe failure, persistence, to figure out where you want it to go, but also not to make it too confusing and too challenging, so you do sort of get in that zone of proximal development, where you're really trying to kind of push the thinking and encourage that persistence. The other concept here is a vet clinic, a pretend play vet clinic, and potentially some pet grooming in there too. A new area in a gallery in our museum, which we call Our World, which is a gallery where children can try on those adult roles and practice being an adult. One of the things that's happened during the pandemic is that there's been a loss of social-emotional skill development for children as they've been having to isolate. We hear that from educators. We hear that from families who come into the museum. The concept here is by caring for pets, children will build empathy, and in this shared space, they'll have plenty of opportunities to collaborate with other children, to learn about some of the things that were mentioned in that video about sharing, about taking turns, and interacting with kids of all backgrounds in this space. And so that opportunity, that's something that children's museums create in our communities, that opportunity to play with other kids and build those social emotional skills. In the area of community engagement, I want to highlight what we do today and where we want to take it to the next level with an increase. And that's primarily where the increase is going, is to fund this area in addition to creating the new learning experiences. Today, we give a lot of attention to building a robust access program. As you've said, that is part of the DNA of a children's museum and why we exist. We're the only museum that is based on who we serve, not what objects we are collecting. So we are all focused on how we best serve children, and part of that is making sure that all of our children in the community have access to the museum. Some of the things that we do to do that is we provide free memberships to Head Start programs, early Head Start programs, and we have those programs requesting throughout the state, not just in the metro area, to be able to participate in that. We have information on the museum and applications for scholarship memberships. Those are available in 6 different languages. And we also, once a month, we have a free day at the museum, thanks to Securian Financial, who supports that. But what we do is we use a reservation system simply to control the number of people that come into the building. It is quite popular. What we do is, in advance of the registration system opening up to the general public, we have a network of family-serving organizations who serve under-resourced families. We get that registration out to them in advance of it going out to the general public, so that we create more opportunity for families who could most benefit from that to be able to participate in that. We also have distributed these play kits, as I mentioned, and also as another example of our community engagement is we have hosted a couple webinars, particularly focused when our museum doors were closed. We hosted a whole set of them, but a couple I want to highlight are, we had a topic on parenting during the pandemic. How do I deal with, what the kids are going through, and while I'm trying to, work or manage other things, or the stressors were happening in life. And so we focused on that. We also did another one that was about how to talk to kids about racial injustice, as we worked through the murder of George Floyd and the reckoning in our community. So with increased funding, we could take this community engagement to a new level and more fully further our mission of sparking children's learning through play. We could increase outreach to underrepresented and under-resourced families. We can do this in a process that builds more relationships. For that, we want to build a community liaison network that is that sort of ongoing relationship with a variety of different communities. We want to listen to learn how the museum can better meet needs of families in our community. And we want to return to hosting special events with community organizations. That is something we are hearing from community organizations. They request us to do it. It is something that we did before the pandemic. Unfortunately, with the pandemic, I had to lay off a third of my staff to be able to respond to, you know, who knew admissions, membership, a variety of our different revenue streams dropped to zero, you know, for months on end with that. And we have been in a rebuilding process with that. And now there's inflation that we're dealing with. And so while our audience has regrown, it is much more expensive to run the museum now than it was. And so we are struggling to bring back that program, which is a request that we get without finding a way to increase our funding. So thanks for your time and attention today. Thanks for considering this request. As I say, I just want to say that I'm here really advocating for an overall investment in children's museums because it's an investment in children. Thank you.
Thank you, President Kreisen. Representative Cha, I believe you have a question.
I do. I get to go? Okay. there's a couple of memories that is in my head about raising my three daughters, and one of them is county fairs, pumpkin patches, and the St. Paul Museum. And so I think you've done a great job with the program, and I will be supporting this bill. But I'm going to ask the same question I asked the last testifier, was in regards to the diversity of your board and, I guess, your employee and your organization. Can you explain or elaborate more on the diversity?
Yep. President Kreisen.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair Lurley. Thank you for the question. So our staff is about a third persons, BIPOC, persons of color, indigenous, black. And I assume you're talking about racial ethnic diversity in particular?
And gender.
Yeah. For our staff, I can't quote the gender, the female, male gender, but I do know that we have more than 10% of our staff who are not identify as non-binary with that, and then probably skew a little more female than male on the rest of it. I don't have that. And then on our board, the gender balance is 50-50 between male and female, and currently we're at 20% people of color on the board of directors, with a priority on the governance committee that their intent is to grow to at least 30%.
Representative Shaw.
Well, thank you for the answer, and I appreciate that. And again, please continue your leadership in the space and continue the work that you guys do. Thank you.
Representative Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I know this is a grant process. I'm assuming, because I'm new to the committee, they fill out a form and then it's reviewed by the board. Can you just briefly give us a high level how that grant process works, how you prioritize? Because I suspect you're going to get more asked than $650,000. Thank you.
Representative Becker, so this actually historically has been, since the beginning, of legacy, since the beginning, it's been a director appropriation to the Minnesota Children's Museum. So the other programs on the other museums have been the last couple of bienniums have been grant processes or whatever through a grant process, but theirs has been a direct appropriation. And then they did step back, like she mentioned, their ask, and then we did do the kind of start of the grant program for the other groups around the state.
But, okay. So I kind of misunderstood.
That's all right. It's all great.
Okay.
Do you have another additional question?
No, I do not, Chair.
Okay.
Thank you.
No, it's good to ask the questions because it is a bit confusing at first. And Representative Hurt.
And Chair Lilly, this is just more a question for the committee, so I don't know if it's not directly for this, the Children's Museum, so I could just ask my question later when they're done. I just wanted to put that out.
Okay.
I'm going to let them go, so they're not sitting there waiting for me. Because it wasn't for them, it's for us.
Okay. So I guess I have a couple questions. So I'm glad to hear that you're, you know, reaching out, and I think you've I'm just curious, have you I know early on that you've played a role where you helped establish Rochester. Are you continuing to have a role where you're helping other children's museums, if that's a possibility around the state of Minnesota, to help them get, you know, their feet underneath them? Director, or President Kreisen.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Lilly. Yeah, we're very proud of the role that we played and really, you know, opening the doors, the first doors for the museum that's in Rochester, and helping that community grow to a point where it can be an independent museum. We are not doing that level of involvement with any of the other children's museums that are starting around the state. However, as I mentioned, we are a collegial field, and so we will have staff or board members from other museums who will come and want to, we share intellectual property with them. They'll come and want to talk about how exhibits are developed or ask about customer service programs or things like that, and we welcome sharing that information with others.
Thank you. And then kind of another question, given that you're downtown and then the parking, so how do you help with parking as well, or have you considered that, or is there free parking? I guess I'm not certain, but it seems like that might be a deterrent for some folks, you know, financially, if, you know, I know you're helping with getting them through the gates, but it just seems like a parking pass might help as well. President Kreisen.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. Yes, parking is a challenge in a downtown environment. And the parking ramp that's associated with the museum is not owned by us. It's owned by the City of St. Paul. So we are a bit at the mercy of their choices in the funding with that. We have negotiated a discount. With participants to the Children's Museum, we do have a discount that they can get validated that they visited the museum, and it is less than the public parking rate. I wish that it was lower than it was, but we don't own it.
Thank you. Representative Finke.
Thank you, Chair Lilly, and thank you for your presentation. I, like everyone else, I love the museum. What percentage of your exhibits are you developing in-house?
President Kreisen.
Thank you. Thank you for the question. We develop 100% of our exhibits in-house. We are actually the largest producer of traveling exhibits in the Children's Museum field. So one of the ways that we have diversify our revenue streams is that we create these traveling exhibits that we then host in our space, and then we tour them around North America. And that rental fees that we acquire is about 15% of our revenue stream with that. And like I say, that was a bit of a surprise with the pandemic, with that revenue stream also dropped to zeros. Like whoever envisioned there'd be a time when, you know, museums across North America all closed at once with that time. But because we have that as part of it, we have a team that, the luxury of having a team of exhibit developers who can put their energies both to creating experiences, you know, mostly to creating experiences here, but then leveraging that for a stronger business model.
Representative Finke.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for that answer. And that's great. I know that being able to send exhibits out is a way to really support other museums as well. So I'm glad to hear that. And then second question is, you said that you had to cut substantive portion of your staff. Have you rehired? Are you back to where you were or want to be, or what does your staffing look like now?
President Kreisen.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the question. We are not back to where we were before. We are working hard to hire more visitor-facing staff as our audience now has regrown. nearly back to where it was previously, and we are facing challenges just with the labor market that other people are facing as well too. So we do have openings if anybody's interested in working with kids. With that, we are continuing to get the word out about openings there. As far as back of house, we have hired back very few of those positions that we had to eliminate back of house. It really is the impact of inflation has been a real challenge for running the museum, and we're just trying to balance. We have the access program for families who income qualify. We are also very sensitive to the price point that people have to pay to come in the door. And so we're trying to kind of balance, you know, not jacking the price up so high and then adding back all these, you know, having it cover all those positions. So that's where we are seeking something like this state funding to kind of help us figure out how to balance that model so we, you know, are broadly accessible to Minnesotans.
Representative. President Krizan, you mentioned that Securian, or I think it was somebody, does a free day. Is there a possibility that you could give us like the cost of like a free day, just generally? You don't have to say it publicly, but if you could get that to the committee and the staff, I'd appreciate that.
Absolutely. Will do.
And then I have another question. Well, go ahead, Representative Weitzman.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you so much for the presentation today, and thank you for a little box. I was hoping there would be something for the kids, and I brought the boys along, and so that was really nice. I'm glad that they had a little project going here. But I have asked in pretty much every subject area that affects kids, and I think I've asked this question before, so I apologize. But for the benefit of the committee and the public, can you talk about the background check work that you do with those that are at the museum? Just Give some peace in mind.
Yeah.
President Krizan.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair Lilly. Thank you for the question. Yeah, I mean, obviously, because we're working with the public, so not, you know, it's a full background check that we do on all employees and any volunteers that would be working, you know, directly with children. We also have many, many practices in place about to make sure that it's a safe place from, you know, making sure there aren't nooks and crannies that, you know, people can get into. Or if you're an adult that comes to the Children's Museum and you don't come with a child, you get a different colored sticker so that our staff on the floor knows that if you have that different color sticker, you should not be interacting with the child. Now, sometimes it's, you know, one of the parents comes later. Well, okay, everybody explains it. We get, you know, confirmation from everybody, part of the family. Great, we'll switch out the sticker, right? And then you can do that. But it's just part of what, you know, just an example of one of the different controls that we do to take child safety very seriously.
Thank you, President. I was just reminded by staff that when we did have our last tour there, we were, as members, we all had this special sticker, which...
Yes.
Anyways, certainly a story there. Representative Heitzman.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So, President Krizan, I did have a question. So, I get, and I really value that you're sending these boxes, and I just love to hear the story that those are going out and that you're using them in thoughtful places like the, you know, with domestic abuse and other. Mm-hmm. I just really appreciate your leadership on that. That's really amazing. I was wondering, you know, just as in our role that, and if there be a way to do, I know you do an exhibit, then you send it off somewhere. Is there a way to do exhibits through you that would be going through libraries? And we also have a lot of, in our diverse community, we have a lot of the cultural centers. And I was just wondering if that would be a place where you could develop maybe a smaller exhibit that went to cultural centers, you know, around the state. I toured a few of them. I think of like the Hmong Cultural Center on University and, you know, some of the different cultural centers. It just seems like something that would be well served for, or good for you and good for them and good for kids, certainly. Is that something that you might be able to do, or?
Yeah, thank you for that question. I think thank you for that reminder, because I think it's a good idea that we need to give strong consideration to. The first legacy appropriation that we had received back in 2009. We had created a Storyland exhibit that did tour around the state. It was about 500 square feet, and it went to community centers and libraries around the state. And you know, thank you for that reminder, because I think that would be worthy of consideration again.
Thank you, President. We do that in other areas, like the water area. We do, you know, We Are Water, and they have an exhibit that goes around, and, you know, and it just seems it would make sense to, you know, to reach people in a different way.
Yeah. Good.
Any other questions for members? Any closing remarks?
Yes.
Vice Chair Hussein?
I'm very excited. Also, I spent a lot of time at Children's Museum when I was young, and I take two of my kids every other Sundays, and they've been learning and asking a lot of questions. I am very excited that when kids play, they grow and they learn, and it's that simple. Let's make sure that Minnesota Children's Museum continue to serve all Minnesotans, and we need to fund them. And the amazing that I get all the time is one of my children always is to in science and asking a lot of questions. So that gives me a lot of a great in return when I see him, you know, that he's challenging and asking a lot of questions and listening and learning. So we need to invest our children since they are the future in this state, in this country. And I want to thank you all. And I'm very excited that, you know, that I'm carrying this bill, because it's very attached to me. And I used to be excited when I got a field trip from school that we go to the museum. So thanks for having me all, and I appreciate it.
Thank you, Vice Chair.
And I want to remark Crazen, the president. She's doing a great job, and continue the work that you're doing and engaging in the community across the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hussein, and President Crisen. With that, House File 1263 is laid over. Representative Hurd, I think she had a general conversation.
Just maybe a suggestion for this committee, too, is that, you know, I feel like when public dollars are used for the public purpose, you know, I just want to know how those public dollars, when I was in property taxes and in taxes, cities would come with the same request, and then we'd have to ask the same question 100 times. And so we just started saying, okay, anybody coming in to ask for property, you know, something in property taxes that is around this particular topic, just bring these particular things so that we know what everybody is saying. So we're measuring everybody on the same, sort of like the same criteria, right? And what I would love to see is when our these public, like our parks or our people who work on our trails or the museums come in, I would just love to maybe have what they can provide for all of us already is like their reach, right? Like a museum out in outstate Minnesota, they're going to have a different kind of reach, and I would like to see, because you know, there are kids who are in much more rural areas who will never have a chance to go to a museum, and if we know that, then where the reach is, we could maybe look at funding in which to help them in ways that actually meet other needs that they may not be thinking about, right? So, like, I would like to see reach, or I would like to see diversity, and not just in race. Like, I think people always think when we talk about diversity, we're just talking about race. But there is so much around, like, income disparities. And there's also, you know, children with different, you know, like, physical abilities. And we're seeing an increase of autism. And, like, do we have exhibits that really meet the sensory needs of a child with autism? And, you know, and, like, if a child is blind, like, I meet with the Blind Association of Minnesota all the time, and If exhibits and facilities are not accommodating to families who have different types of disabilities. And so I would just love to see some of that data from everyone who comes in that says they want public dollar funding for this. And also just like other public sources that they're asking for funding, because I see that the same institutions are asking for money from legacy, from bonding, from early childhood. And so I can't make an accurate assessment of like why we're asking for different pools of funding if I don't know where else the funding is being asked from. And so it's just a suggestion for me so that I can sort of evaluate everyone sort of under the same criteria, so that it doesn't feel like I'm maybe just asking questions of one entity and I'm not asking of everybody else. So that's just a suggestion on my part, and I would just love to see more of that so that when people come in, they should just know the expectation is bring all of this information, because we're probably going to ask you, and so if you give it to us, we won't waste time in committee asking everybody the same questions. So that was just my thought. I know we can have more conversations on this separately, but I just wanted to share that that as well.
Thank you, Representative Herr, and I think it's a good challenge for the committee to you know, we've tried to ask questions as we move bills through, and historically we've had it's interesting because presenters have been asked different questions of the, you know, through the Minnesota House, and then they had to create a totally different presentation with the Minnesota Senate. Mm-hmm. And so that may change, you know, now or may not, but I'm certainly open to the questions, and I think I'll reach out to members, and you know, I think people are listening, may not even be in the room, so they know, I think through conversations, they know that part of their presentation, I mean, I can tell you that the presentations have actually changed through my years on, you know, that the discussions are totally different than they were, you know, not just mentioning today, but just generally what's talked about in their presentations. So I think a lot of groups are listening already, even though there isn't like a set sheet, so they're doing better. And but like the board question, that's a new question. And so, and it's a good question. And I think, but I think we could sit down and maybe come up with a sheet, and I would sit down with Representative Backer as well and see what, you know, so that we can kind of meet everybody, what they want to hear and request. Because I think these are public dollars, and we're, you know, we're really under a great responsibility with the, you know, because people went to the Constitution to pass this specifically and said and spoke and said, we want to be taxed extra to do this work, you know, and it's serious work, actually. I think sometimes people think it's just a fun place, but it really is important work that we're doing here every day. And with these funds, you know, it's such a great opportunity. We're unusual compared to other states to have this, and we need to do a good job and set a good example. And then, you know, when we come back to the voters, ultimately, we want to be able to say that we were, you know, our water's cleaner, or, you know, that, our there's more restoration done, that we're doing a good job with our museums today, or whatever it is. So thank you. I appreciate that.
And I just wanted to say quick, and Chair Lilly, thank you. And I just want to say for the record, I think you're a great chair, and you always do a really wonderful job of listening and trying to make changes. And so, like, my suggestion is not a criticism. I think it's just a shifting of what we would all like to see, some of us. And so I appreciate you always being willing. And I've seen even, like, you know, all of the members of this committee have been really thoughtful, both sides of the aisle, and asking good questions and really caring about the issues and being good actors and all this. So I really appreciate being on this committee, and you know, it's not a criticism, but I think you've done a great job listening, and I appreciate it.
Thank you. So I think we're there. It was an interesting day at the Children's Museum. Thank you all for coming today, and I think it really is important work that you're all doing all over the state of Minnesota, so we'll try to figure out how to meet the interest and demand in this area. It is growing, which is great, and they're hugely popular, the children's museums, and we know that as members, and the value, and we're just appreciate your coming today. And with that, we are adjourned. Thank you.